everyone. I'd like to welcome you to today's program. We are going to get underway, but I do want to remind everyone we are recording today's session for future reference, and all of the phones are muted on our end. When we get the questions and answers, I'll give you instructions on how you can unlock your line. So I'm now going to turn the program over to Leslie Bolte. Leslie?
Thank you, Rod. And as way of introduction, my name is Leslie Bolte. I'm a senior project manager with a government quality improvement organization. And on behalf of HiMark, I do thank you for your attendance at today's teleconference to review the 2016 measure set for the Medicare Advantage STARS Primary Care Incentive Program. There is a lot of content in this slide deck. I will not read everything in the deck, but I did want you to have it. I'm just going to try to highlight some of the key changes from the specifications from 2015, as well as introduce some new measures, and I do want to allow time to do that. So I'll try to be brief on the measures that are known to us and hopefully known to you, but if I am making an assumption and you need to know something else, please do feel free to write down the question and we'll get to it at the end, okay? So in brief, there are 16 CMS measures listed on slide 2. 11 of these are static measures and 5 of these are dynamic measures. And what I mean by that, the static measures are measures that can be closed after an event or a test or a result relatively quickly. We kind of call them our one-and-done measures. However, there are 5 dynamic measures that do require patient management throughout the course of the year, and the results are based upon the final score of that member, meaning compliance level of that member, at the end of the measurement year. Some examples of those are C15, which is comprehensive diabetes care, HbA1c control. It is the last value of that measurement year that does impact whether that patient is considered compliant or not compliant. There are 17 measures listed on this deck. One of them, C51, is a HiMark measure, which is the annual wellness visit and initial preventive physical exam rate, and that is used for our multiplier at the end of the year based upon whatever your performance attainment here is for STARS, whether it is 3.75 or 5, your completion rate for annual wellness visit and the initial preventive physical exam will determine what type of additional multiplier you get at a per member rate. So let's move on to the measure sets. CO1, breast cancer screening. I did put on this for everyone. You'll notice there's a particular format. It is a one-weighted measure. The 5-star threshold for this measure is 83%. The only thing I wanted to highlight about this measure is I do know that people wonder when the heading says percentage of females 50 to 74 years of age who had a mammogram to screen for breast cancer, why we put under the denominator that is those females 52 to 74 years of age on the last date of the measurement year. That is because this measure does have a 15-month prior to the measurement year look-back period. So to help you figure out which females that is, it would be females that were 50 as of the age of October 1st, 2014, or will be 50 we're 50 as of that time period. So that kind of helps you understand the start point for that. So that means that, you know, the female patients that were 50 on October 1st and already had their mammograms may be showed up as closed during the measurement year when you first get your first report. There is a supplemental data submission pass for this measure. It is for the exclusionary data for the HiMark members if they have had bilateral mastectomy or 2 unilateral mastectomies. It is the reporting of the second one saying that this is a second unilateral mastectomy via the clinical feedback loop that will remove this patient or from the denominator. So this certainly does help you to report that information. We do suggest that you do address this during your annual wellness visits to provide script or counsel that the breast cancer screening is still a key preventive screening for our female members. Just for clarification, it is a Medicare Advantage benefit. It is covered in full The limit is one screening every 12 months, and you must distinguish between screening and diagnostic tests because the screening portion is a covered and full benefit. Going on to slide 5, colorectal cancer screening, CO2. It is a one-weighted measure in this program year. It is a 5-star attainment level, is 82% compliance. Again, there are various paths by which you can be enumerated compliant with this. You can do annual FIT testing, or you can have show record of a flexible sigmoidoscopy or a colonoscopy. The flexible sigmoidoscopy has to be done during the measurement year or the 4 years prior to the measurement year, and colonoscopy is during the measurement year or 9 years prior to the measurement year. Again, that is, if you do have members that were not a Highmark member at the time that those testings were completed, that is submittable data through the clinical quality feedback loop. You can submit the reports that demonstrate that has been done. I did want to point out that we have had much success both as a Highmark insurance plan, but as some of our practices have reported to us in the distribution of FIT kits for those members that are not willing to have colonoscopies and flexible sigmoidoscopies. We do know that, you know, that those are the gold standards, and they do last longer, but your members can certainly meet the requirements by having a FIT kit if they have some inability to get those tests done or some fear. You know, the FIT kits will tell you if there is a positive result, that it is highly suspicious, that additional follow-up is required. Highmark does do some member outreach on this and does encourage members to do this, but we do encourage the practices to, you know, self-distribute these kits in their practice while they meet the patients during their annual wellness visits or other visits through the year. Therefore, you can get both the credit or the funds for the test itself, whereas otherwise, you know, Highmark will just send them out to members at the end of the year in certain areas. We do not holistically release FIT kits to all members. Additionally, just to clear this up, because we did have a friendly partner with us that was concerned about the FIT kit distribution, it is a covered and full benefit. And we will pay in full 2 times a year for that FIT kit test. It is not an annual coverage determinant, so members will not get scheduled if they will not get bills if they've had a FIT kit already. Just to also emphasize, if you do have a member that had a FIT kit done in November of this year, you can go ahead and give them a new FIT kit in February of this year, and it will be paid. Again, if, it is important to distinguish between screening and diagnostic testing. There are many colonoscopies that are done for diagnostic purposes. So if you want to assure that your member gets the most benefit out of their plan, it should be marked screening. CO7 is adult BMI. We've had a lot of success, and we thank our partners on this, on this measure. It is a one-weighted measure for 5-star attainment. It is 97% of the threshold. We actually do expect that CMS will hold us to a 99%, but that just seemed a little high, so we went with the 97% in this particular case. It is those members who had an outpatient visit and whose body mass index was documented during the measurement year or the year prior to the measurement year. There is a spec change in this year, and we just want to call it out. We did inform you of this in October, but let's make sure we understand. For members younger than 21 years of age on the date of service, the BMI must be reported with the appropriate percentile ICD-10 code. Again, as a reminder, for BMIs after October 1st, 2015, you do have to use ICD-10 diagnosis codes. This is a static measure that we will pay static gap closure for if you provide us a result from 2016. If you furnish a result from 2015, that is not considered a gap closure incentive payment. However, it will count towards your percent completion at the end of the year. Again, we did add this measure to the clinical quality feedback loop this year to allow you to result that way if you so choose, although that does take, one submission per member. We do strongly encourage that you work with your billers and coders to capture the ICD-10 diagnosis code that is associated with the BMI result value on claims. And please do remember that you need to code to the highest level of specificity. There are very distinct CPT-2 codes, very distinct diagnosis codes that have to be adhered to that reflect the actual BMI. We do have a chart of that, and we'll make that available to you. I believe we may have released it last year as well. I just wanted to point that out. As a special reminder, height and weight in your chart is not enough to support the submission of BMI. You do have to calculate the BMI in your medical record. We do know that a lot have that already built into their EHR, but this is a reminder for all. It has to be the actual BMI calculation. Osteoporosis management in a woman who had a fracture is a one-weighted measure. I'm on slide 9. The 5-star threshold for that is 77%. There are no specific specification changes on this measure except to say that they do accept BMI testing that is done on an inpatient basis. It does not require an outpatient bone marrow density test that be completed. As a reminder, your members who have had a BMD test within 24 months prior to the fracture date are excluded. They are not numerator compliant. They are excluded from this measure set. We did try to stand up some new processes this year and reporting this year for this, so I wanted to review what is available. There is a ad hoc osteoporosis management report. Since this measure does have such a short remediation period, we try to get you the members that have been coded as a fracture as soon as possible. I do want to remind you this data is not run through the HEDIS engine because we are trying to release it as soon as possible to you. So you may see members that reflected on that ad hoc osteo report that may not end up in your STARS member care gaps report, and that is because they have some other factor like continuous enrollment factor that is not including them in our STARS data. But we do want you to know it is, good care for all. So it is important that, we try to promote the best care for each and every one of our members, despite whether or not they're in a denominator for us. But there are other factors that may pull people out of that. Additionally, this year, towards the end of the year, we did stand up what we call ad hoc suspicious diagnosis reports. And we have heard from many of our providers that we are sharing members in our denominators on the member level detail report that under measures that you do not agree that they have that diagnosis, osteoporosis was one of those measures that we've heard a lot about, that this patient truly did not have a fracture. I do want to tell you that the way that we determine who has a fracture is solely based upon claims data that we receive. So someone somewhere did submit claims data that pulled that member into the denominator by indicating that they had a fracture. Now, whether or not that is a carryover diagnosis or whether or not it was a preliminary diagnosis that got submitted on the claim as an actual as opposed to suspected or history or whatever that the appropriate descriptor was, it's there. So what we tried to do was to apply some logic, and I'll just give you an example using osteo. It shows the suspicious diagnosis reports show members that have claims submitted to us that have given them the diagnosis that pulled them in, the fracture diagnosis that pulled them into the denominator, but we have no claims data indicating an X-ray no claims indicating the expected follow-up care that we would expect to see. So we have classified those as highly suspicious diagnoses for that member, and we have shared that information with you. And what you see on those reports is that that is who diagnosed that member, as or what claim was submitted on that member that pulled them into the denominator. And you do have the ability to conduct claims correction process as a normal process in dealing with claims. If you need advice on how to do that or support on how to do that, please do contact your provider relations rep or your clinical transformation consultant. They'll gladly work with you. But we do suggest that you go through those reports because those members are attributed to you. We're not saying that it's 100% accurate, that, you know, they're, maybe we don't have all the information that we need, but it does give you a starting point to understand and to correct. If all claims are corrected on that member that you see, and you will see all claims that pull that member in the denominator, they will come out. Additionally, just to make that point, our best practice is to obviously make sure that the patients that you are applying fracture diagnoses to do indeed have a fracture, and that there is not a better code that you should be using. There is a table on slide 11 that gives you what the ICD-9 codes were prior to 1001 and what the ICD-9-10 codes would be for those categories. And we do have to tell you, this is only educational support only, but there are ways to say a history of a fracture, a personal history of a fracture, or a aftercare code for the orthopedic treatment that is required for appropriate healing for those members. We do want you to know this is not a comprehensive list, and it is just intended to provide educational support. You must follow CMS coding regulations and guidelines when applying diagnosis codes to your claim. Okay. Slide 13 is on eye exam care for diabetes. Diabetes care eye exam is a one-weighted measure. The five-star threshold on this measure is 85%. There really is nothing new about this measure, but I did want to point out, because I believe there may be some confusion, for the exclusions, which are diabetes gestational or steroid-induced diabetes during the measurement year or the year prior to the measurement year, for the exclusions to be removed from the denominator, the member must not have a face-to-face encounter in any setting with a diagnosis of diabetes during the measurement year or the year prior. So if you are saying we also have an errant diagnosis report available for diabetes, they do sit out on your user interface under your provider reports. So, you know, if somebody is diagnosed with having diabetes and they really have gestational or steroid-induced diabetes, we need you to take a look at that and see if that diagnosis is appropriate. Because once a regular diabetes claim comes through, that member is in. Did want to talk a little bit about the eye exam and the supplemental data pass that we have for that, just for a clarification point. We do have a clinical quality feedback loop function that is available for this measure. It is allows you to submit numerator compliance screening tests and exclusionary data. It, however, does not allow you to input the code 3072F, which indicates that a member had a negative eye exam of last year. This data point must be submitted on a 2016 claim for numerator compliance, because what that code says is that last year they had a negative eye exam. The eye exam is an annual preventive measure. The only way that you can exclude somebody from having that test annually is to say that they had a negative exam the year prior, which would be in 2015, but you must report it in 2016 because of the wording of that. They want to make sure that in 2016 the providers have evaluated that diabetic and determined that that diabetic does not need to have another retinal eye exam in the 2016 year. So it is a, you know, a case-by-case decision to go ahead and submit that code on a claim. But I just wanted to explain why it is not in the clinical feedback loop and why it will not close the care gap if you do submit it to the clinical feedback loop. Do want to call out that the Medicare Advantage members do have medical benefits and vision insurance, but that may not fully cover this exam. There are copays. They have been reported to us as much as $60 or higher to some members, so I do want to point that out. Our best practice on this measure is to touch base with the ophthalmologist or optometrist that is seeing your patient. And to, you know, as you're talking to your patient during their annual wellness visit or another visit during the year, you can certainly tell them that you are requesting that they get this eye exam and that the report must come back to you from the eye exam. That way you can submit that that code as long as you have that report within your medical record. If your member does have that test, you can also report that they've had that through the clinical feedback loop, and there are also other additional CPT-2 codes that say that this member has had the test during this measurement year. And they believe, and I'm going to talk off the top of my head, which is always dangerous, but they believe that is 2022F. C14, there is a change to this measure, and it's kind of significant, so I'll tell you what it is. This is the Comprehensive Diabetes Care Medical Attention for Nephropathy. This is a one-weighted measure. The five-star threshold is extremely high at 98%, and the reason that is that this test only requires being completed. It does not require being resulted this year. The HEDIS specs had changed for 2016, and if you are partners with us in the 2015 MA incentive program, you will notice that your scores did increase dramatically. I believe it was from October to November. In that time period, because we did give credit to our providers that had whose members had evidence of the test being completed and not requiring the result. I do know that we did make you jump through hoops and provided the path through mass claim submission, but that had kicked off before that spec change became known to us in the November HEDIS specs. So once that occurred, we did remove that obligation to report the results as far as when we were resulting. You said this should be very telling. Those members that are non-compliant towards the end of the year on this measure means that they did not have nephropathy testing done. Going on to slide 17, the Comprehensive Diabetes Care HbA1c Control, less than 9. This truly is an inverse measure. We actually look for the members that are greater than 9 or did not have the test done. And then it's actually 1 minus that. So it does give us the percentage of your population that is less than 9. This is a 3-weighted measure, and the 5-star threshold is 85%. There is a small change that was released in the HEDIS specifications in November of this year. It does say that the service date for the Category 2 codes and the test result must follow the requirements outlined in General Guideline 36, which states the dates of service for the code and the test result must be no more than 7 days apart. So that means when you, if you submit on a claim, you have to submit that claim timely if you're going to submit the CPT-2 code with that claim so that it is within 7 days of the test being submitted. And that, when I mean that the charge for the test hits us so that they can tie together in the appropriate manner. Additionally, if you are submitting $0 claims with this CPT-2 code on it, the date of service needs to be within 7 days of when that test was actually drawn. So again, our best practices range from we do stand up mass claims adjustment forms at the end of this year, but I do want to tell you that we have been providing, we provided a new report for this year towards the end of the year, and I believe that we're going to do it more frequently, and our reason for doing that will be to give you the benefit of the data on the report for clinical reasons, but for those of you that do not know, on the provider user interface, there is a report that is an ad hoc HbA1c report, and what it tells you is who the member is. It starts like yes, no. Did the member have a test? Yes, no. And so it'll be answered yes, no. If the answer was yes, it will tell you if we have the result of if the result of that test has been reported to us, and by which path. And when I say by which path, there are some labs direct feeds that we have that we get the actual result of the test in that manner. So it will show you the actual test result. Let's say it is 6.8. If you see a number like that, you know, and there's a column that explains it, it'll give you the exact test result. Otherwise, if we've picked it up through a $0 claim or a regular claim or a mass claims adjustment, it will show the CPT-2 code value, less than 7, range of 7 and 9, or greater than 9. So we're going to do that on a quarterly basis this year. Just to give you a sense that who is out of control and who is in control and who hasn't had a test so that you will know. We found that pretty valuable towards the end of the year. I know that we got a lot of providers that reached in and said it was a great tool, but we're thinking clinically, you know, it might be helpful for you to know who is out of control that so that you can work towards managing them to lower their HbA1c value. C17 is disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drug therapy for rheumatoid arthritis. It is a one-weighted measure. The five-star threshold is 88. So I did want to point out, we do get a lot of questions about the timing of the national drug codes to us. So HEDIS every year releases to us these specifications. They release them to us in November, hence why this doesn't happen sooner in the year as far as introducing what the measures are. But we get them in November, and they do provide tables of what those medications are. At that time, they do provide an associated NDC list to us, but they only update that once a year. So while there may be new manufacturers that do make these drugs, or new generic forms of medications, can only be updated in our systems on an annual basis. We do update this year for 2015. We are updating the NDC list that came to us this November for resulting for this year to give you the most accurate information we can and to give you credit for everything that you've done. You know, our intention is obviously to do the same for next year. I just know that we do have this NDC list for this year, so it's easier for me to say that it'll get done. But next year we hope to get it in November again, and we will update the closest we have to resulting. So I hope that helps. Again, you know, we do have an errant, a suspicious diagnosis report for this that we have established. You know, for us, there are other similar diagnoses. People may suspect that a patient has rheumatoid arthritis, but not be sure, and they refer them to a specialist and for the final diagnosis. But we did list for you on slide 20 what some of the diagnoses that we have seen on some of the members that are pulled into the denominator as well. So whether or not there have been both a rheumatoid arthritis, but there obviously was a rheumatoid arthritis, but there are additional very similar diagnosis codes being submitted on these members. So we call those kind of suspicious. So we did release a suspicious diagnosis report on rheumatoid arthritis as well. Just to share with you some of the logic that we used on that, I did list it here, part of it, but if we had a patient that has never had a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis this year or the year prior submitted to us, and we have no especially visits for a rheumatologist on claims into our systems, then we become a little suspicious as to whether or not that was that is a firm diagnosis. In addition, you know, we do assume that everyone that's on a DMARD does have rheumatoid arthritis because that is you know, the purpose of those medications. So we did remove those from that filter. But I do want you to take a look again because we do know that this is a low denominator measure as well as osteoporosis. So if you have some that are that are diagnosed wrong or have been diagnosed wrong by yourselves or others, you know, it is worth taking a look at and seeing if that is true. C19 is all-cause readmission rate, Medicare Advantage. It is the same specifications as last year. I did leave these things in red because I just want to call them out again. Just saying this, that the way that this is scored and reported out, it is a ratio of observed to expected acute inpatient stays during the measurement year that were followed by an unplanned acute readmission for any diagnosis within 30 days. The members may be readmitted to the same hospital or to a different one. I know that this is a tough measure. We all find it to be very tough. The ratio, though, is being used because it is the cleanest level reporting that we can give you. We do know what the rate of observed is. That would be the actual number of members that did get readmitted to the hospital. The expected ratio is an algorithm that is that will tell you it is a risk of readmission based upon that patient's diagnosis, age, secondary diagnoses, other comorbids that our CMS is aware of. So we are sharing that ratio with you. You do see on your STARS reports the actual readmission rate. But that is not the trend compliance level, the ratio that determines your score. And just to give you some examples on slide 23, I do tell you how that calculation ratio is determined. Let's say your practice has 100 acute inpatient discharges, of which 20 were unplanned readmissions, based upon the application of the expected model. To those 100 originally discharged patients, only 10 of those patients were expected to be readmitted. So now your ratio becomes 20, which is your observed readmission rate over the expected, which is 10, or 2.00. Conversely, if your practice has 100 acute inpatient discharges, of which 20 were unplanned readmissions, and based upon the application of the expected model from CMS, to those 100 patients, 30 were expected to be readmitted. Your ratio now is 20 over 30, or 0.66. So that is how that is determined, just to let you know. So I wanted to get into some of the new measures for this year. DM20, and the reason it has DM is that it's a display measure, Part C measure. We have received our November call letter that did say that this will be a measurement for the calendar year 2016. It is a one-weighted measure, five-star level of 84%. It is statin therapy for patients with cardiovascular diseases. You may recall that in the 2014 program year, we did have some LDL testing and control level measures, and that those were retired by CMS, and we were told they would retool them. This is the retooling effort of that, and they are live measures. So this is the number of patients with cardiovascular disease, and that is males 21 to 75 and females 40 to 75, identified by event during the year prior to the by an event during the year prior to the measurement year, which means events of 2015, were discharged from an inpatient setting with a myocardial infarction, had a coronary artery bypass surgery, percutaneous coronary intervention, or other revascularization procedure in any setting, or, and this gets complicated, so listen closely, by diagnosis as having ischemic vascular disease, who met at least one of the following criteria during both the measurement year and the year prior. And the criteria does not have to be the same across both years. So this means if you have a member that has a diagnosis of ischemic vascular disease in 2016 in an inpatient or outpatient encounter, and in 2015 had a diagnosis of ischemic vascular disease in an inpatient or outpatient encounter, they will show up in the denominator. So there may be some late comers about an ischemic vascular disease, because as the 2016 marches on, they may be added to the denominator. So what is required is that those members fill at least one ambulatory prescription for a high or moderate intensity statin. So we've put together a little chart for you that shows you by the HEDIS specs what is considered a high intensity statin therapy and moderate intensity statin therapy, and those are on slide 25 for you. It does require one fill because we require a pharmacy claim. It is not an adherence measure, though. On page 20, or slide 26, display measure 22, statin therapy for patients with diabetes, is percentage of members who had at least one dispensing event for a statin medication of any intensity. These are members age 40 to 75 during the measurement year with a diagnosis of diabetes who do not have clinical atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, who were dispensed at least one statin medication of any intensity. So that means whoever was in the DMC20 measure will be excluded from this measure. There are other exclusions. You can go through them, but there is myalgia and myopathy, and some difficulty taking statins are excluded from this measure as well. It is a one-weight measure. It is a five-star threshold. It is 83%. And again, we did give you a table of high, moderate, and low intensity statin therapies on slide 27. And again, it does require a filled prescription. It is not adherence, though. It just requires one fill. And this is the exact table from the HEDIS specifications. DMC21 is medication management for people with asthma. It is a one-weighted measure. Five-star level is 81%. The denominator are members 18 to 85 identified as having persistent asthma who met at least one of the following criteria during both the measurement year and the 12 months prior to the measurement year. They must have at least one ED visit or acute inpatient encounter with a principal diagnosis of asthma, or four outpatient visits or observation visits on different dates of service with any of diagnosis of asthma, and at least two asthma medication dispensing events or four asthma medication dispensing events. There are large exclusions for this measure. Again, it is members who had diagnosis of emphysema, COPD, obstructive chronic bronchitis, chronic respiratory conditions due to fumes, vapor, cystic fibrosis, or acute respiratory failure during the member's history throughout the last day of the measurement year. So this could end up being a very small denominator as well. It is a static measure. Oh, no, it is not. I'm sorry. It's a dynamic measure that does require maintenance because the rate... It is the members who remain on an asthma controller medication during their treatment period. The rate is the number of members who achieve a proportion of days covered by at least 75% for their asthma controller medication during the measurement period. This is a very similar measure for those of you who have experience with our pay-for-value programs and our PCMH. This is a long-standing measure for us. It just got expanded to the Medicare Advantage population. It does have a different age on it. These are only 18 to 85-year-old Medicare Advantage members. Did want to point out that one of the exclusions is obvious. If your member does not have an asthma controller medication dispensed during the measurement year, they are excluded from this measure. And again, those members that do not carry Highmark Part D benefits also are excluded. So we did list a table on slide 29 of the members that, or the drugs that qualify as asthma controller medications. These are different than asthma rescue medications, and the intent of CMS is to ensure that members are properly dosed on the controller medications to help prevent multiple readmissions for asthma flare-ups. There is no change to the medication adherence measures, just so you know, for D12 medication adherence for diabetes medication is the same. Again, those members are excluded who do not have pharmacy claims or members who take insulin. D13, I do have a new measure to cover, so I'm trying to get through this. D13, a medication adherence for hypertension. There, again, is no change to this measure specification from 2015. It is a three-weighted measure. A five-star compliance is considered 85%. Medication adherence for cholesterol statins, D4. Again, this measure spec has not changed. This is a three-weighted measure. Five-star compliance is considered 83%. Here's another new measure, and I wanted to spend some time talking through it. This is D15, Medication Therapy Management, MTM. The actual measure is percentage of MTM eligible members who receive a comprehensive medication review comprehensive medication review, and I listed that wrong, during the measurement year. This is sort of a Highmark developed measure. The health plan is indeed measured on the number of our members that are eligible that have comprehensive medication review. However, this is not an outright measurement for at the provider level. We're working hard on this one. This is a three-weighted measure. The five-star performance is 81%. And what this is there are members that meet eligibility requirements are your members that have three or more chronic conditions who take a minimum of 7 Part D medications and are likely to incur annual cost of at least $3,507 for all covered Part D drugs. There are targeted chronic conditions that include arthritis, osteoporosis, chronic heart failure, asthma, COPD, hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, depression, and end-stage renal disease. This excludes members that are under hospice care, and they also excludes all members who opt out within 60 days of the program eligibility. So the numerator is of your members, your eligible members, who are identified to you as meeting the criteria for MTM outreach, who complete a comprehensive medication review by an approved CMS vendor during the measurement year. So to give you some background on this measure, at the current time, we are required to submit to CMS a plan of action on how we're going to address medication therapy management. Our plan requires CMS approval. At the current time, we are operating under a vendor model where there is a vendor we are working with called PharmMD. We worked with them last year to reach out to our membership that is eligible for MTM management. Go to my next slide so that it can help you understand. What happens is they reach out to the members that are eligible for our MTM program, and they get a letter telling them that they are eligible, that they also may opt out, and at any time during the program year, and how to reach back out to PharmMD to schedule a comprehensive medication review. That in itself is not all that happens, but they do reach them by phone to PharmMD. We'll conduct a member contact asking the members to participate in a comprehensive medication review. However, we would like to obtain the 81% level that we have shared with you and have scored. So we are asking that our providers support us in this. We will be showing you on your monthly STARS care gap reports which members are eligible, and asking you to support those members and say, you know, let them know that they are eligible and should be completing a comprehensive medication review. The member also gets, when they are done with their medication review, a letter sent to them, as well as the PCP provider will receive a letter sent to them that will detail what the personal medication list is that was discussed during the call, any plans of action detailing the conversation that member had had with the pharmacist. They also are, and I'll ask if they would like to do target medication reviews on a quarterly basis, but you will be getting documentation for your medical record that this review has been completed and what medications have been listed. This does include all medications, including over-the-counter, herbal supplements, and samples. So they are assessing for the purpose of therapy and potential interactions. It would be helpful to share that information with the PCPs and ensure that they are aware of everything that the members are on. They are going based upon the claims data that they have from us, as well as the conversation they have with the patient. So our ask is that you reach out and support the initiative. We have given you the comprehensive medication review hotline number where they can PharmMD can be reached Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. to assist in scheduling. And we are working on some talking points for you to communicate with our members. This is not going to stop the vendor engagement aspects of the program. And many of you may be familiar and may have heard that your members have had them. The completion rate so far for last year, as reported at December 1st, was greater than 50%. So our goals are to reach 80%. So I'm going to C51 is annual wellness visit, so I'm going to end on that note and open for 10 minutes of questions, Bob, if you can open the lines. And thank you. There will be another one of these at 4 p.m. today. Additionally, there will be some other sessions held that are going to target the biller and coder aspects of submitting the data documentation necessary to capture. An example, it's an opportunity for us to talk with your billers if you would like about which CPT-2 codes need to be applied to a short gap closure.
Okay, thanks, Leslie. Let's start with some questions and answers here. If you do have a question for Leslie, do a *6 to unlock your line and then make sure your phone's not muted. Also, give us your name and the facility that you represent. And just a reminder, we are recording today's session, so your voice will be recorded. Okay, let's open it up for questions.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Heritage Valley Health System. I have a couple questions.
Sure, Jen.
So as far as the hemoglobin A1C measure for control, you're stating that the CPT-2 code cannot be submitted any later than 7 days from the patient getting their lab work drawn?
You could submit a claim any time, but the data service that you put for when it is done has to be within 7 days. You have longer to submit the claim, but when you submit a data service on a claim, it has to be within 7 days of when that draw was.
So the issue with that is patient compliance. We can't force the patients, as you know, to go within 7 days. So if they go on day 8, then we automatically fall out.
No. It is the date. It's not the date that you order. It's the date that the test is done. So you get lab results back from your lab, right?
Correct.
So you would know when that lab was done. So you could submit a $0 claim on that member when you receive that lab value?
Right.
I mean, it's just that you have to be able to, the HEDIS rules say that you have to be able to tie the lab draw date to the lab value date, right? I mean, if we were doing this by chart review, which, we could do this by chart review. If we did it by chart review when we go to do the chart chase, you're going to have the labs up there that says this lab was done and resulted in a certain day.
Okay,
when you try to do it via claims, we just want to make sure that it matches.
Okay, that makes sense.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah. The second question I have, for the readmission measure, what is the threshold for that ratio? It wasn't stated on the slide.
Five-star ratio is 0.66.
0.6.
And it's the same as this year. We did not adjust it.
Okay. And then for the medication therapy management measure, the new one?
Yes.
So the PCP cannot perform?
Not at this time because we require CMS approval. And we submit that approval far in advance of the measurement year. It's kind of like when we submit our formulary, we have to submit our plan of action on that measure. Mm-hmm. There are considerations for enhancing that, but at this time, we have to go out with what we have.
So PharmMD, if they can't get a hold of our patients, then we get dinged for that.
Well, relatively, we do make every attempt to do that. They are, I can't tell you the contractual language in that PharmMD encounter for that, but it is not a one-and-done contact try.
Okay,
just so you know. We are trying to encourage, and, you know, we do welcome if you I do want to put a key element that I said there that I don't know that everyone got. When we show you the eligibility list, it will show you the date that member became eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, you have conversations with that member within 60 days of that eligibility date and they say, hey, I don't want to do it, you know, that does pull them out of that whole discussion, just so you know.
So is it essentially an exclusion?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Sure thing.
Okay, any more questions? Star 6, unlock your phone.
Yes, I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm a pharmacist, and we work in a outpatient clinic, and we've been doing MTMs. Is there a way that we can sign up to do these for our own patients?
Yeah. Like I said, it's not that is out of the realm of possibility. We are do have a contractual relationship with PharmMD at this time. What the hookup about that is, or the sticking point about that is this. The vendor or how we choose to do this must be approved by CMS. So it's already an approved path. It doesn't mean that we don't have the opportunity to explore that. We just can't go out this year without CMS's approval to allow for our pharmacists within our PCP practices to do it. You have a valid point, and, you know, I'm going to ask if you would like to submit to let your CTC or PR rep know that I've asked you for this. If you would like to represent your provider practice,
okay,
and we will keep a record of that. And if things change, we'll let you know.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. See, you know, I just want to explain. Let me just give one other explanation to that, too, and I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut anyone off. But it is more than just completing the CRM, and because there is a required CMS format for how that personal medication list has to look and what that medication action plan has to detail, as well as what communication has to occur. There has to be a communication that goes back out to that member saying, for them to have a hard copy, this is what we did, and this is how it looks. And then there also has to be outreach to either the PCP, if nothing is wrong, but if there's something, you know, whatever, they have to reach into the prescriber of that medication. So there's kind of some IT system things that are involved in this as well. So it's not, I don't want to say it's simple, because I'm not saying comprehensive medication reviews are simple. There's just other CMS requirements that tie to what does it mean to complete a CMR. So I just wanted to make that clear. But go ahead. Sorry for cutting somebody off. I didn't mean to. I just didn't answer fully.
That's okay. Hi, this is Andrew from Heritage Valley. So if we're communicating with our patients and they want to sign up for the MTM, we could call. What if they're saying, no, we're opting out? Do we do a three-way call with them? Do they have to specifically say that, or how do we?
Yeah, you cannot represent them. You know, they can have other providers of care speak on their behalf, but unfortunately the physician is not one of them. Like if they had a caretaker or, you know, a medical power of attorney or whatever, they would have to accept that. But
okay.
So that member, you can do a three-way call, and that member can tell them right then, I opt out. Absolutely.
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay. Sure thing. And I expect there to be questions. We'll continue to take questions.
Hi, my name is Lisa from the Hinesman Area Health Center. I have two questions. First of all, when you want us to report the BMI, is that done with both ICD-10 and HCPCS-2?
I'm sorry, I'm going to cough.
On the same claim?
You really just require the ICD-10. It is a diagnosis code. We do not require that you list. There is a 3008 F code. That is not required. The only reason that you've heard us mention that code is when you're trying to do it on a $0 claim, you need a line under diagnosis and a line on your claim line in order for your claim to process. So that's why you've heard us mention, you know, those other procedural type codes. Don't need to do that. If you just list it under diagnosis, it's good enough.
Okay. And my second question is, you talk about these ad hoc, like the ad hoc diagnosis code report. Where is that found?
They're under the user interface under Navinet, Quality Blue, your reporting that you see for pay per value. Do you have access to that?
I have my Navinet up now, and I don't see anything that says ad hoc diagnosis code report.
Does it say errant diagnosis? I can't
no.
have to think of what it says. Wait, I'll find it. Suspicious. That's suspicious, doesn't it? See anything that's suspicious?
No, I have STARS Medical Adherence Report, STARS Care Gap Report, the Hemoglobin A1C Status Report, and the HRM First Fill Report, and everything else is from 2015.
Okay. Oh, well, it was released in 2015. I'm sorry. Keep on going back. We released them the very end of last year. We haven't run them for this year yet because we actually don't have any 2016 data yet because, you know, January. By the time you guys see somebody in January, you know, STAR starts brand new January 1st, so we have to wait for your January claims to come through.
In December 2015, I have STARS quality incentive payment. I have incentive earnings report, combined reports for period paying, score assessments report, quality reports for period ending June of 15, emergency department utilization. And then I have my unconfirmed diagnosis reports.
Okay.
I don't have any ad hoc.
If you haven't gotten one, it means that there were no members that fell out of our logic reports as a high level of suspicious for either one of those three diagnoses. That doesn't mean that you don't have them, and you may want, if you have somebody that has not, so, you know, not every provider has had members that fell into those reports. There were a lot of them, though, and so I can't speak to that in particular, but I will look just to make sure that none of your members, that it didn't get to you, but it should have. They all uploaded, so you apparently didn't have anyone that met that logic criteria. So, you know, we took a stab at creating logic that said this doesn't look right based upon what claims data we have only. So not all providers did get reports because not all providers had members that fell into that. If you did have somebody that fell into it, you did get a report. I will tell you to watch because the next reports are coming out in April sometime, so you might be able to find some there.
Okay. Thank
Otherwise,
you.
Otherwise, if you have something suspicious, please do work with your PR rep or CTC. And we can probably get you the data that you need to track why that member got pulled in.
Okay, thank you.
Please hold the line. We'll be right back with you.
Hey, everybody. That gets us to 1 o'clock.
Good question.
Leslie, do you want to take one more question, or are we going to conclude?
Boy, I really have to conclude, although
okay,
there is another presentation at 4 o'clock. I'm in my boss's office, and they're standing out there.
Okay,
sure,
guys.
Really
so, yeah, we
me.
Are going to conclude today's session. Just a reminder, there is another session today at 4. It is the same login information that you got this morning. So if you want, you can pass that on if you would like. Additionally, this recording, along with a PDF copy of today's presentation will be available on the Provider Resource Center within about a week or so. I'd like to thank everybody for their participation and have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, bye.